From Cortland, New York, America's smallest small city, it's the Nerd Bomber Podcast, featuring the best news, entertainment, and related discussion that pop culture has to offer. And now, your hosts and experts in anti-social media, Just Jamie and your friend Claude! Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, welcome to the Nerd Bomber Podcast. I am your friend Claude, here as always with
Just Jamie.
And today's show is about video games that were so cool, they almost made us switch consoles just to play them. But first, let's boldly go over to Just Jamie and find out what he's been doing recently.
I did a cool thing.
Oh yeah?
You want to know about it?
Kinda.
William Shatner has been on tour lately doing screenings of, I think he's always doing Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And we actually talked about Wrath of Khan a little bit because in a previous episode recently, we talked about Star Trek The Motion Picture and how that movie kind of sunk the franchise. So they made Star Trek II on a minimal budget. The TV department made the movie. But it ended up being kind of the most iconic of the Star Trek movies. So he is taking this movie on the road. He's doing screenings of it at, not movie theaters, but, you know, auditorium theaters. And then he comes out and does a little talk, Q&A afterwards. So we went to the on-center Heinz Krauss Theater in Syracuse, New York, and saw a screening of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, my wife and I. And afterwards, we watched and listened to William Shatner.
Excellent. I saw that being advertised and really wanted to go. And had no idea you were going. And then saw your social media posts and called you a couple of choice names.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a spur of the moment thing. We kind of like, we should just do this because the man's almost 90 and it's just an experience that you're not going to necessarily get a chance to have again. So, and we went, it was totally worth it. He is a really good storyteller. I have a feeling these stories are very rehearsed, some of them. I'm sure he tells them and has expanded upon the reality of the stories over the years. Although at least one of the stories turns out to be pretty true because there's, you know, YouTube evidence of it going down the way he tells it. And but he's still like a very high energy guy for a guy who's almost 90. He's walking around the stage, you know, going backwards, going sideways, you know, telling his stories in a very animated fashion. He really could have done it all. They had an MC there, a local radio guy. I don't know who he was. But Shatner really could have done it on his own, I think, because he just was mostly telling stories. And it was a really good, really enjoyable thing. I am definitely really glad that we went.
An unforgettable experience for Trekkies of all generations.
Cool. Well, listen up, Hollywood. If you've ever played a character in a classic movie, Jamie's got his eye on you.
And next time, I'll let you know ahead of time.
The least you could do. Speaking of classic movie characters, that brings us to this week's installment of...
3, 2, 1...
Pop.
3, 2, 1, Pop is the part of the show where we take three current pop culture headlines and rank them as we see fit. And coming in at number 3 this week, the previously announced Obi-Wan show for Disney Plus has been delayed, possibly up to and including at least a year. Reportedly because Lucasfilm president and Obi-Wan producer, the notorious Darth Kathleen Kennedy, was not happy with the scripts that were written for the series. And how about that timing, huh?
It's really something. According to one headline, the crew was sent home, which means they had reached production stage. And so that really puzzles me, actually, that things got this far.
Yeah, they hired a crew.
They were ready to go, it sounds like to me, before the rug was pulled out from under them. So that really is a puzzling thing to me that the process got. I don't know the details. I'm not there. But the fact that they got so far along and then pulled the plug on it, postponed it, whatever, that's a puzzle.
Yeah, it appears in late-breaking information that in addition to pausing to re-examine the scripts, They're also planning to reduce the number of episodes that were planned. It was originally going to be 6, and now it's going to be 4.
Okay, so I'm not going to jump on any opinions for that. I mean, I'm always of the mind that whatever the story you have is, you when it comes to these sort of legacy or you know, A-level series that you see now on television streaming services, you know, cinema quality. Whatever the stories you tell, you make as many episodes as it takes to tell that story. You know, you don't need to stretch it out to reach a certain number of minimum episodes. You don't need to make it. You just make whatever you need. If they only need 4 episodes to tell the story, I'm fine with that as long as the story's good.
Well, it's interesting how, like, in the wake of The Mandalorian being so well received, the expectations for this are pretty high. People are excited that Ewan McGregor is coming back to play the role, and now that they're announcing that they're pausing it to really make sure it's even better, are they just setting expectations way too high?
Yeah, I didn't think of it in that way. Yeah. They're saying, we're going to make this even better. It's going to be so good. I mean, because, again, you mentioned The Mandalorian. You know, the most recent movies have been divisive. Let's just say that.
Right.
But when The Mandalorian came out, it was met with pretty universal positive reactions. So, yes, they've set themselves a reputation that TV is the new place for quality Star Wars programming. So not only does this new show have to try to meet that expectation, but they've doubled down and said, hey, we see what we have, and we're going to make it even better before we show you.
Right. Well, I guess at the end of the day, they're trying to make it better, so let's all do as Obi-Wan would do himself and look at the light side. He never said that.
I didn't think so.
Coming in at 2, the 2020 Royal Rumble, WWE's annual Battle Royal-centered pay-per-view event, happened last night as we record this, and it was long. Also fairly entertaining. Starting in 2018, they have had a Rumble match for both the women's and the men's competitors, and I suppose it will be the case going forward. The winner of the women's Rumble was Charlotte Flair, which, is, if you're a fan, it probably was no surprise. And the winner of the men's Rumble turned out to be Drew McIntyre, which, if you're a fan, it probably was a surprise.
Yeah, agreed. I didn't actually watch the pay-per-view. You did. I did see highlights of the Rumbles, and it looks like some interesting, fun things happened. I liked a lot of what I saw. A couple goofy spots, especially in the women's match. There's like 3 things that happened in the women's match that are a little bit tougher to deal with. One is the return of stars from a certain era, that is, of women's wrestling in WWE that maybe wasn't quite as...
athletic?
Yeah, athletic, highly skilled, technical.
Yeah.
And in today's day and age of such a high level of women's wrestling, especially in the WWE, they kind of stand out a little bit.
Right.
And then the other 2 was a couple of, you know, one was like a cheap pop. They brought Molly Holly out as her Mighty Molly superhero character, which I thought was a little bit goofy. And then they did a comedy spot with Santino Marella coming out as Santina. And I just thought that seemed a little bit out of place. But overall, it looked like a good show. It looked like a good performance. I'd like to see a new face other than Charlotte Flair.
Right.
But again, like you said, it comes as no surprise that they're going to try to get as much, because that means that she can challenge for a championship belt having won the Rumble.
Yep.
So the obvious thing to do, although they could prove me wrong, but the obvious thing to do is to reignite her feud with Becky Lynch. It was the hottest thing in wrestling for a little while. They're kind of the 2 top women stars in the company right now. So I've kind of had my fill of that feud, but it comes as no surprise that that's the direction that they seem to be going.
Yeah, they like the tried and true in that company. And the other event of note was the return after nearly a decade of the rated R superstar, Edge.
Who's it gonna be?
You think you know me?
No, no way. Oh my!
You gotta be kidding me.
The rated R superstar! Edge is here!
Yeah, that kind of came as a surprise. I mean, I don't know how much of it was. It's been rumored for a while that he'd been cleared to return and it was going to happen. And I think he had sort of dismissed that in terms of in-ring.
Right.
The Rumble is always kind of a safe place for an aging and or injured former star to come back, because you can kind of hide in the Rumble a little bit. You can do certain things, and you can stay away from doing certain other things, and it still looks pretty good. It's been a tradition for kind of older stars to come back to the Rumble every once in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, but he was in it for a while, and he did. I mean, he was one of the final three or four guys in it, and he was in the match for a long time. So I think that came as a little bit of a surprise to me.
Right. I don't really know what this means for him long term, but it's kind of interesting.
It is.
Definitely. Time will tell. And in at number one this week is a topic that is, you know, at number one for sheer cultural saturation. And that is the surprising and untimely death of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, this is hitting the world pretty hard, actually. I mean, he was a pretty big star, pretty well known, pretty much everywhere, even outside of this country. I was watching, of all things, the X Games when the little news item came across the ticker on the bottom of the screen, and I just kind of happened to look up at the TV as that item went off. And I thought I saw what I thought I saw, but I also thought that can't be right.
Right, yeah.
So I hit the go back button, and there it was. Kobe Bryant, 41, dies in helicopter crash. And then the other odd thing was, I don't think the people commentating the X Games knew about it, because they threw to SportsCenter at the end of their telecast, and they were all cheery and, you know, hey, dude, yeah, man, X-Files or X Games vibe. Yeah. And then they threw to SportsCenter, which is all of a sudden a very somber tone, because they knew they were about to talk about the death of Kobe Bryant for the next hour or two. And so that was a little bit jarring. And then as more details have come out, it certainly hasn't gotten any better.
No.
It turns out his 13-year-old daughter Gigi was with him and also perished in the crash. Seven others, including the pilot and other players on her AAU team that Kobe coached. Other parents and coaches were on board. And just, it's really awful. It kind of hit home with me. You know, I don't like to put too much weight on a celebrity death just because they're famous, you know.
Right.
People die tragically every day, and it's always very sad for the people that know and love them, of course. But this is just in your face, so you can't help but be affected by it.
Sure.
Also, you know, all the kids on this team are 12, 13, 14, all, you know, these girls, these three girls that died in the crash. And I have two daughters, 12 and 14. And so it just kind of hits home a little bit, and it just kind of reminds you to, man, it can fucking end at any point. So,
right.
You know, live your life. That's kind of like the message I came away with it. But I suppose anybody would rather it just didn't happen at all.
Right, right. Best thing we can do now is move forward in life and with the show. And that brings us to today's main topic. We're going to be talking about some video games that were so great, they almost made us want to jump to a different console than the one we owned just to get a chance to play them. So I'm going to start it off, and my first pick goes back to the days of PlayStation 1 versus Nintendo 64. I was a 64 owner and never really was enticed by anything on the PlayStation until I worked at Toys R Us. And, you know, we always had the demo system set up. And I, you know, as much as I liked, you know, playing 64 and playing whatever else we had set up at the time, the Dreamcast was one of them.
Wow, yeah. Nice.
I kept sneaking to the back where they had this Activision Spider-Man game on the original PlayStation setup.
Be Spider-Man. Swing from buildings. Shoot webs. Bring down the bad guys. And for the first time ever, you have all his cool spider powers.
Jim, the garbage isn't gonna take itself out.
You don't just play it, you live it.
Jim?
Spider-Man the Game. Rated E for everyone.
From the creators of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
PlayStation.
I think it was the first example of that type of game where it was, you know, kind of freely swinging through the city, and it just kind of captured the dynamic of Spider-Man really well. And it became addictive. And it was the one game where I was like, wow, this is actually like really enjoyable for me.
Yeah, that game has reached kind of iconic status. I mean, it was obviously the first time Spider-Man had been properly represented in a video game.
Yeah.
Everything else was side-scrollers, but the whole point of Spider-Man is his dynamic movement. You know, even as he comes from a still image media of comic books, it was always about dynamicism. Is that a word?
Yeah, like extreme poses.
Yeah,
and
poses and swinging and movement. And the fact that you had 360-degree, three-dimensional control of him in what kind of was an illusion of an open world.
Right.
and one of the early games of its kind. It was a big deal, even with the short draw distance and the fog that was always seemed present because they just couldn't render those buildings in the distance.
Exactly.
But yeah, it was pretty. I mean, I don't know how groundbreaking it was graphically, but they were doing something pretty different.
Yeah, it's more about the mechanics kind of breaking ground than the visuals.
Right. So I'm gonna go now. So, you know, I didn't have like video game systems as a really little kid. I never had a Nintendo, never had a Super Nintendo, never had a Genesis. In the early 90s, I did get a Game Gear, which was Sega's handheld system. It was essentially a hardware clone of the Master System, which was an 8-bit system, although I think it had more color capability. And as a kid, I was fooled into thinking that it was a 16-bit system. I didn't recognize the difference.
Right.
But when you look back at what the Master System had, they had a lot of games that looked pretty damn good.
Yeah.
For Sega Master System, and like I said, the Game Gear was a clone of that hardware, and I really enjoyed it. Got a lot of play out of it. Loved Captain America and the Avengers, G-Lock, Madden, what have you. However, we had a friend, mutual friend, who had a Sega Genesis back in the day, and he had a couple of oddball games that really made me want a Genesis. The first one was RoboCop versus Terminator.
Oh, yeah.
The classic side-scroller. It just looked so cool. It had that Genesis grit to it,
yep.
Which, you know, most people now kind of think it's a weakness of its graphical power because the Super Nintendo was always a little bit cleaner.
Yeah.
But I like that look of the Genesis, that kind of gritty look. And RoboCop versus Terminator just looks so cool, so detailed, so smooth, so fun, easy to pick up, you know, very arcade style, which is kind of my speed. So that was the first one that always made me kind of think, man, the Genesis is really cool. And the other one was kind of another oddball one, Mutant League Football.
Mm-hmm.
So this was essentially a football game constructed in the Madden engine, but there were like, you know, pits or landmines on the football field. You played as creatures and skeletons and monsters and mutants. There was a Saturday morning cartoon based on it for a while.
Oh, really? Awesome.
There was also a Mutant League hockey game, which was the same kind of idea. But the one that I played, again, at the same friend's house was Mutant League Football.
Rising from the ashes of this devastating tragedy was the most exciting and dangerous sporting competition that the world has ever seen, known to all as the Mutant League.
Oh, in your face!
And that was something that was not recreated in the Sega Game Gear, and to my knowledge, there might have been a Super Nintendo game or something like that, but I played it at his house on the Genesis, and again, made me think that, man, the Genesis is pretty damn cool.
It's a pretty cool premise, really, and it seems to be widely considered one of the hidden gems for Sega Genesis. And, you know, when they were first talking about doing a mini Genesis system like they'd done with the Nintendo and Super Nintendo classics, you know, these things only have like 40 or 50 games on them usually, and people like to talk about, you know, what their dream list would be and like what's going to make the cut. And Mutant League Football always seem to be on most people's lists.
Yeah, it would definitely be on mine. Of course, it never does. For years, me and this friend that I'm talking about, Tom, we had this inside joke where we would talk like the coach on that game because they had, you know, a digitized voice.
Right.
But he just went, meh, 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 meh. There were no words. There were no actual. He would just do that, and then they would give you the text.
It was like a word balloon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but for years, that was kind of an inside joke where we would just do that to each other, and it was hilarious every time. You just have to trust me. So those are kind of my first two picks in one because it's the same system to the same system, Game Gear to Genesis. I never did end up owning a Genesis until lately. I've got a kind of a plug-and-play Genesis with a cartridge slot, so I've played a lot more Genesis games in the last couple of years. But as a kid, I never had one, but I had some experiences at, like I said, our friend's house, and I had an aunt and uncle who had one too. So, but that's my first entry. Back to you.
Okay, well, going forward in time, I progressed from the Nintendo 64 to the Nintendo GameCube. And Nintendo GameCube was, I thought, a really fun and really pretty cool system. I feel like a lot of people judge it kind of harshly, but I never had a problem with it, and I was pretty happy with just about everything I had to play on it. But certain games existed for other systems that were just like, all right, man, it would be really nice to at least have, you know, two console. wasn't necessarily wanting to make the Switch at that point, but I wouldn't have mind adding an Xbox for a video game named after the previously mentioned Star Wars character, Obi-Wan. released by LucasArts in 2001, and much like the Spider-Man game for PS1, this was also kind of a groundbreaking first for the Star Wars characters, in that after years and years of wishing and hoping and dreaming, finally here was a game where you could control a Jedi and do the Jedi things and control a lightsaber like the way you could in any other sword fight game. And for whatever reason, up until this point, that wasn't really an option. You had versions of that, and it was very like limited. And you had games on the Xbox even, like Knights of the Old Republic, where they were sort of, overhead role-playing games. And then they would have cutscenes where you'd see other, like, the computer do the lightsaber stuff you wanted to do.
Right.
But yeah. This was, like, it gave you full control, and, like, you even had, like, practice little tutorial missions to learn the Jedi powers and things. And it was just really satisfying, and I still enjoy playing it now, all these years later.
Yeah, I have zero experience with that game at all. So I don't have much to say about it. I mean,
who didn't want to be a Jedi?
Everybody did. And the thing is, like, up until that point, basically you had either side-scrolling Star Wars games, which, similar to Spider-Man, like, never quite really capture Star Wars fully. And there were a lot of space battle simulator type games based on Star Wars mythology. I mean, some of the most popular ones were actually, like wireframe vector graphics, Star Wars fighter games from years before. Right around the same time as the game you're talking about was things like Rogue Squadron and Shadows of the Empire, which were mostly space shooters as well.
And I like both of those. Yeah, that's my number two. What else do you have?
All right, so I'm going to take a step back in generations now from where you are. I'm going to go back to N64 and PlayStation. Now,
nice.
In the mid-90s, I was a PlayStation owner, I became a PlayStation devotee, so to speak, at that point. Although I would later have a GameCube. I never had an N64. I never really had much desire for one. The controller was weird. Some people love it. I never did, of course. I know that's a big... Go ahead.
I love it.
Of course. It's divisive, though. I mean,
sure. It's very unique.
Yeah, so... And I never had it. And again, this goes back to the same friend, Tom. He had an N64. I would go to his house, and that's what we would play. And the one, again, it's kind of an oddball pick. The one game that kind of was like, man, I wish I could have that experience on my PlayStation was this game called San Francisco Rush.
Introducing San Francisco Rush Extreme Racing. The only rules you need to follow are the ones in your head. San Francisco Rush for Nintendo 64 and PlayStation consoles from Midway.
I mean, at this point, the game doesn't have much of a legacy or a footprint. People don't remember it in any particular way. But what I remember about it was, once you got going, you hit the ramp or the guardrail or another car, or you did things just right, you'd end up on top of buildings or inside parking garages or driving through office buildings. It just seemed like this... It wasn't at all an open world game, but the world of the racing felt more open than I'd ever experienced in a racing game before.
Right.
Usually very limited. Most games are very limited to the track. And on this game, you probably weren't that far away from the track, really, but it made you feel like you were just careening wildly into all these different directions, into different places that it felt like it was built into the game. You were not breaking the game, but felt like you were hacking something. Like you would find yourself somewhere that you weren't supposed to be, in an alleyway or a side road or something like that. And there was nothing like that on PlayStation. They would release this game came out in 97 for N64, and they would later come out, a version of it would come out the next year for PlayStation. And I rented it and I tried it, and it was nothing. Really? It was nothing like the N64 version. It was just a very, very much kind of a straightforward racing game. And as a straightforward racing game, it was inferior to the likes of Ridge Racer or Gran Turismo. But as this sort of like wild, crazy experience where you found yourself in all these weird predicaments, that was a whole different experience and a lot more fun.
Yeah, I remember playing that too. I'm pretty sure our local Walmart had the arcade version for a little while.
Yes,
I would play that often. And it's, it makes you... It's very clearly designed to do that, but you almost feel like you're kind of pulling one over on something.
Exactly.
You know, like, it gives you incentive to go off the track.
Yeah, you're breaking the game. You're discovering something you shouldn't be doing. Yeah, but it wasn't the case. Yeah, like you said, it was built in. But it made you feel like you were doing something special because at that point, you know, there wasn't a lot of like open world gaming and things like that. And this was a racing game, clearly not open world. But it just gave you a little taste of something different that you weren't used to, especially, like I said, in a racing game.
Yeah, bonuses are fun. Who doesn't like bonuses?
Exactly right.
All right, well, for my final choice, moving forward one more notch in Nintendo Evolution, I left the GameCube behind for a Nintendo Wii. And, I mean, everybody knows by now how well-received and popular and fun the Nintendo Wii was.
One of the better-selling consoles of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it, for good reason. And I was quite satisfied with pretty much every game I had for it, and I had a pretty decent selection. However, over on Xbox 360 was the goddamn masterpiece, Grand Theft Auto V.
You're back in the game? I guess.
Yes! Woo! Welcome back, man!
We're all professionals. We all know the score.
This is legit business.
401ks, tax returns, and all.
We're going to move quick, and we're going to keep cool.
My job, my score, get your own!
You are alone, you pathetic psychopath!
Suppose a group hug's out of the question?
Grand Theft Auto 5, coming September 17th, rated M for mature.
And, you know, there is, I mean, it's totally different purposes at this point for these consoles. You know, we've left the era of a game being split into multiple versions to try to basically be the same or similar experience on each of the competing consoles, like you would have in the Super Nintendo versus Genesis days.
Right.
This is, Wii is just designed for a totally different type of play and, you know, and totally different gaming experience. But what Grand Theft Auto V offered on the 360 is, I believe to this day, one of, if not the greatest gaming experiences of all time, because it's massive. It's so comprehensive. I mean, it takes the idea that you were talking about with San Francisco Rush and just like it expands it trillion fold. I mean, there is literally something hiding every 5 inches in the game, you know, that you can explore and go off the main mission and main purpose. But also, there's something in it. There's like a small version of almost every type, every category of video game is represented in this game. There's like a miniature version of like a Call of Duty type game built in, and you know, like the Sims type experience, and you know, basically racing games. You're stealing cars and driving around the streets of LA, and you know, espionage missions, and I mean, you name it. And there's like side missions to like strip clubs and you know stores and things you can just buy, and it's basically like you're playing somebody's life, or at least the movie version of it. And boy, is it capable of stealing hours of your life.
You'll never get them back.
No.
Yeah, I've never played any of the Grand Theft Auto games. I got out of the modern gaming space after like the PS2 era. Never had a PS3, never had an Xbox One or an Xbox 360, never had a PS4, or whatever other systems kind of were in that mix. I've only just recently finally got a Switch Lite, which, you know, it barely counts as a modern console. The Switch is kind of in a different space than the Xbox or the PlayStation because it's serving a different market. It's an underpowered system. But there are, you know, open-world sandbox-type games available on it, and it's kind of a good opportunity for me to get involved, although, you know, there were, like, the first, it's not up to what GTA 5 was, but there are some of the classic GTA games are available on PS2. And I have thought about, you know, grabbing them from a retro game store and giving them a run as a taste of what is possible in those types of games, to see if I would enjoy them.
Right.
And then maybe, you know, upgrade to what you describe as one of the best of all time that, again, I've never tried.
Yeah, it is. I truly believe it. And, you know, once you get in there, I'm not sure I'll see you again. Back to you.
Back to me. All right. This last one is a game that I never played, but always kind of intrigued me. It's Halo for Xbox.
When it seems like all is lost, when it feels as if you have no hope, when you are outnumbered, overpowered, and they've got you cornered, that's when you realize your last best hope is you. Halo, Combat Evolved, rated M for mature.
Big one.
Yeah, it is. It was maybe before GTA 5, Halo would have been considered sort of like the game series of you know, any time after 2000, maybe.
Definitely.
I've never played a lot of the first-person shooters. I still haven't, and I still have not dove into Halo to this day. But at the time, this was, you know, I had a PS2. PS2 didn't have anything to really compete with this. You know, games like Time Splitters or Red Faction really weren't quite doing it. I tried Killzone, but that's a first-person shooter on rails. Halo was a little bit more open-ended than that. And so the PlayStation just really didn't provide that experience. And I never did, like I said, I never did make the move. But it was close. The only thing that held me back is that, again, I have not played a lot of first-person shooters. It's not really my preferred game style. But it was just so ubiquitous in the culture at the time. That's what almost pulled me in. But, you know, in this day of modern gaming and downloadables and re-releases, etc., I'll probably get my chance.
I've played Halo. In fact, I believe that at one point I even had the Halo Special Edition Xbox console.
Ah.
And that's about my experience with Halo. I mean, it was fun to kind of shoot around a couple times. I wasn't ever really... It's like Space Call of Duty or something.
Right, right.
I don't really, you know, I liked GoldenEye and stuff back in the N64 days. That was a groundbreaker.
Yeah.
But, and this is kind of an evolution, you know?
Yeah.
GoldenEye might have been the gateway drug for Halo.
Sure. I mean, I think the aesthetics of the thing are what appeals to me. I have no interest in playing Call of Duty or sort of a military-based game that takes place, like, in the real-world military. Right. I don't have any interest in that. I like the sci-fi setting because it's not in the real world. The whole point of video games sometimes is not to be in the real world. So, although I'd like sports games, so I guess that's whatever. Whatever. My point is, like, the aesthetics of the thing are what drew me in. So that's why, like, you know, yeah, I could play first-person shooters on the PlayStation 2 when I had that. They were available. You know, Halo just looked different. It looked like something that appealed to me more. It seemed like the heir apparent to something like Doom, that is.
Right.
You know, the kind of the macho space marine type of thing going on, fighting aliens.
Yeah.
Or, well, in Doom's case, I guess it was demons. But it still seemed more closely connected to something like Doom to me than it did to something like Medal of Honor.
Sure.
Or you know, Tom Clancy games or whatever. So, again, I never did make the move, but it was tempting at the time. And of course, like I said, I've been away from modern gaming for years. You know, I got into some retro game collecting and things like that. I've only recently sort of jumped back in, kind of in the shallow end with a Switch. But there's some stuff on there, and I'll have my chance to play. I just recently downloaded Doom 3, which, again, is, you know, almost a 15-year-old game now. But it's definitely the most advanced first-person shooter I've ever played, which tells you something about the level of modern gaming that I've been taking part in over the last decade.
Right. Well, that is the beauty of your own personal video game journey. And our journey for this topic has come to a close. But last night was not only the Royal Rumble, it was a big night in music.
That's what they call that.
Sound that is melodic and is purchasable. The 62nd annual Grammy Awards were held last night, and some pretty interesting things happened. Why don't you tell us what they are?
Yes, while you were watching the Royal Rumble, I was watching the Grammys. The big takeaways were that Billie Eilish won all four of the big four awards, which are Record of the Year, Album of the Year, Song of the Year, and Best New Artist. It was, you know, of course, she was nominated in all four categories, so a win or two wouldn't have been surprising, but to see her make the clean sweep was a shock to a lot, including her.
Right.
She could be seen mouthing as they were going to the last one, "Please Don't Be Me." And I think she was pretty legitimately surprised and a little bit embarrassed. It seemed legit coming from her. I wouldn't expect too much platitude from Billie Eilish. So I think it was legit. And also, in addition to her winning those big four awards, some of those in along with her brother Phineas, because he serves as writer, producer, et cetera, on her music, he won two Grammys for... He won an engineering award and a Grammy for producer non-classical.
Mm.
So they kind of cleaned up this year. It was kind of impressive.
Yeah, I also heard that she's not only the youngest person to ever do that, she is the first ever female to ever win all four. And the first person since, believe it or not, Christopher Cross in 1981 to have done that.
Yeah.
So that means none of the heavy hitters have done that in the meantime. No Michael Jackson, no Whitney Houston, right. No Beyonce. So that's pretty impressive.
It is. It was really surprising, actually. There were some other deserving things up for awards. It's modern pop a lot, so it's not something that I'm listening to very heavily or know a lot about, but I do listen to Billie Eilish. I do like her music. I like what she has going on with her brand of pop, which is very dark and moody and different and a little... So I appreciate what she's got going on. So I was pretty happy about that. I was glad to see something that I knew actually win an award, because it doesn't happen a lot with the Grammys. One thing that should be mentioned was she had a performance at the Grammys too. And of course, with her music and her videos being very different, unique... her performance was a ballad. It was just her singing this very soft, controlled ballad with her brother playing the piano. So I think that was kind of a little bit of a creative risk, because the expectation would have been for something different, but she totally killed it. So that was good. Other high points were a performance by Tyler, the Creator. He does a really, it makes me kind of interested to dive more into his catalog, because he won a rap award, but he even says, his music shouldn't just be categorized as rap. It's something different. And what I saw was very, very unique. I mean, he was rapping, but he was also doing some sort of hardcore growling and heavy low end,
right.
Some droning sounds with like a heavy sort of down-tempo beats. I really liked it. Lizzo had a great live performance, as you would expect. Played a killer solo on her flute. Lil Nas X. So,
the Pink Cowboy?
Yeah. So he released this song, Old Town Road, this past year.
Oh, that's who he is. Okay.
Super, super overplayed. All the tweens like it. My kids love it.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, eh, okay, whatever. Billy Ray Cyrus, I get it. It's kind of a gimmick. He came out and did a live performance of that with Cyrus, with this South Korean boy band called BTS, which looks like...
Oh, God, they got those
looks like a parody. But I got to tell you, it was a good performance.
Brought down the house.
It did. It really did. Everybody was into it, and actually, the original Nas came out and rapped too. So they had Big Nas and Little Nas.
Wow!
And I have to say, he kind of won me over with that performance. It was, it was kind of cool. And then the other one was a performance by Her, H-E-R. She's a female musician and singer. She played piano while she was singing, and then she ripped a guitar solo in the middle of it, which was fucking awesome. So I've got to dive more into what she is and who she is and the music that she makes, because I was pretty impressed by what I saw.
Yeah, I've never heard of her.
Yeah.
Good Grammy. That will bring this installment of the Nerd Bomber podcast to a close. I have been your friend Claude.
And I have been just Jamie.
And we'd like to wish you a happy National Kazoo Day.
You know what? I think we're going to be friends. Special friends. And when I'm with friends... I like to have fun. I like to sing, dance, pretend.